Welcome to another edition of Today's Nutrition, where we look at the latest in research, what's hot in the news, or topics that can affect your health, vitality, and longevity. Well, boy, do I have an experience to share today. Our family recently took a trip to Cuba, and it wasn't at all what I expected. I guess I expected it to be like Mexico, with little 16-year-olds carrying around machine guns and a big military presence that would reflect a communistic society, but not at all. In fact, I don't even think I saw a policeman. It was a lively, colorful, vibrant, friendly society that's buildings, you know, a little shabby and in need of repair and paint, but overall, more like the United States than like Caribbean islands. There were a lot of street vendors selling homemade hot desserts, deep fried, and peanuts, but no beggars or children trying to sell things. There were a lot of locals sitting around benches and curbs, visiting and laughing. I imagine it was a lot like America in the 40s and 50s, where marketing and entertainment was all downtown, where people just gathered to do their shopping, visit with each other, and catch up on things. Overall, the vibrancy and atmosphere of Cuba today is buzzing with optimism and hope for the future. So, because today's food and the culinary things really reflect the history, a little bit of their history. Christopher Columbus was busy back in 1492. He not only landed in the United States, but he also landed in Cuba, and the Spanish began to colonize the island. The original inhabitants died or were eliminated by the Spaniards soon after. So the island was mostly influenced by Spain for the first couple hundred years. Sugar and tobacco made it a very prosperous little island. You know, they were influenced by a lot of other world leaders, but Spain was probably the biggest one. And then after that, the African influence. So politically, like us, they wanted independence from the motherland. And then you had the independence war with Spain. The United States got involved, and that left us with Guantanamo Bay back in the 1900s, or the early 1900s. So the recent history includes some colorful history with the American Mafia and Frank Sinatra of the 50s, a lot of corruption, and that corruption set the stage for Fidel Castro taking over January 1st, 1959. And within a couple years, he began converting everything to a communistic society that paired them with the powerful communistic USSR. You know, the U.S. investments, the U.S. was thrown out, and relations deteriorated into the Bay of Pigs invasion, the Cuban Missile Crisis with JFK in 62. Anybody who was alive in the U.S. at that time was very aware of the Cold War with the USSR and the fear of Cuba having missiles that could reach us just 90 miles away. Then, when the USSR collapsed in the 1990s, they stopped supporting Cuba, stopped importing their sugar and tobacco, and this devastated the economy, and the government began severely rationing food. The government euphemistically calls this a special time from 90 to 98. It was practically a period of starvation, where there was strict rationing to a few pounds of beans and rice and potatoes and a daily ration of a little bit of coffee, one egg, one bun, and a cup of milk for children. Starvation and deprivation and health deteriorated. Finally, I mean, things are changing now, but the conditions were horrible. And that's, you know, when political relations with the U.S. got even worse. This is when you had the Mariel boat lift, and many people headed to the ocean in homemade rafts, trying to get to the U.S. in desperation. It was a time when Castro kept a very tight grip on a financially deteriorating and desperate society. So this sets the stage for Cuba today. You know, things are loosening up a little bit, but they still drive the big old cars from the 50s with the shifter on the tree. A few Russian cars, But boy, when we cruised into the port on that warm and perfectly sunny day, it was like a time machine. You know, we saw lots of interesting sights and Cuban music playing, very colorful, well-kept American convertible cars driving along this pristine shoreline. I almost expected to see Ricky Ricardo and Lucy Arnaz in one of the cars with Babalu playing on the old radio on a Sunday afternoon. It was like taking a walk back to the 50s, not just the cars, but everything else. You know, brooms made of palm trees, big old buildings that may have one day been casinos, but now mostly empty, and a lot of the buildings around the pier were collapsed, in need of some repair and construction, but also a lot of new construction with American hotels going up right on the shoreline and shopping plazas going in. And I hope that's not going to be just a lot of American shops, but you know how it is. But most interesting, no cell service, and radios are the old transistor radios of years ago. If a radio broke in the last 60 years, they had to be really good at fixing them or scavenging from old parts, because imports, rare and very expensive. I doubt if they've thrown anything away. Very resilient and resourceful people have developed. You know, they have to learn how to fix everything. And with little else to entertain after dinner, you know, no computers, no video games for the average American, they still go out and play baseball or marbles. I imagine it really is much like life was in the 50s and 60s. Now, you know, I was really looking forward to the food, because food reflects the culture and the history. Much like ours in the Midwest is reflective of farm life, Cuban cuisine is really infused with the hardships of the recent past. Old cooking techniques use low heat, mostly coals, all day long. And the recipes are very simple, probably the reflection of a lot of the rationing that's gone on. I was expecting spicy things with, you know, Creole cooking or Mexican spices, but no. Salt, pepper, garlic, a little oregano, a little cumin, but that's it. However, lots of sugar, starchy foods, a lot of deep frying, very Western in their health statistics. More on this later, because it's a real problem. Farmland, you know, it's starting to open up, and that's a very good opportunity. But because everything has been owned by the government, everything they grow, they pretty much export. Like chocolate, cacao is almost exclusively exported. But things are changing. There are these small restaurants starting to pop up, and they're family-owned. They're called paladeras. And they've got the best food. Probably all the government people will eat there. But the paladeras serve black market food. You know, they've got the beef and the lobster and the chocolate. And there is a long story about the beef industry in Cuba. Back before Castro took over, there were more heads of cattle than there were people. But the cattle industry was not well managed after Castro took over. And it collapsed to less than a quarter of the size. And that stands today. A single steak today can cost about $25, which is more than the average Cuban makes in a month. Wages are about $18. The government instilled sanctions, fines, and severe restrictions on cattle that still stand today. More about the food. One pot cooking. I kind of like that, you know. Well, be, you know, where they've got a little bit of meat and they use a lot of rabbit because that's what's available, but they cook it all day long. Staples are a lot of beans and rice, and the rice that they used to grow before Castro now is almost exclusively imported from Brazil and Asia. So, you know, the diversity in the land has all but collapsed. But now we've got these organic farms called organopupcos that are up to about 7,000 are bringing back variety into the diet. Tamarind, pineapples, peaches, apples, maguey, mango, yucca, eggplant, spinach, oregano, limes, mint, onions, plantains, coconut are all being added back to the beans and rice. Plantains were brought from Africa, so there is a strong African influence, but they're typically fried in sunflower oil. So unhealthy. And they also eat a lot of yucca fries. Again, deep fried, high in starch, high in calories, but, you know, high in nutrients as well. Overall, the nutrition of the food was really disappointing for me. High sugar, deep fried, high starch, low vegetables at this time. And obesity and health are now really reflective of Western society. 51% of the population is overweight or obese. Still behind our current 72%, but rising with every census. And another interesting side note, they use very little drugs. People rely on the natural remedies. They weren't allowed to import much, so they use mostly common remedies. And with the rise of organic farms, I think the diet is going to improve. In fact, tonight at home, we're going to have a Cuban experience. I'm going to try to make a healthy slant on the typical Cuban meals. Maybe I'm going to get out my grandma's tablecloth and maybe her old dishes, you know, the little ones. Cast iron skillets, of course. Turn on that music and pretend we don't have phones or internet for one evening. Overall, it was a fantastic trip, and I would love to go back and maybe stay in the countryside so you really get an idea, because it was like stepping back 80 years to a much simpler, more connected time. So there's another edition of Today's Nutrition. Cuba, 90 miles south and about 70 to 80 years in the past. Thanks for listening. Have a great day and imagine what life was like here 80 years ago.
And that's another Today's Nutrition with Dr. Deb Ford, Doctor of Clinical Nutrition, brought to you by the Good Earth Health Food Shop on South Shannon Street. The information you hear on Today's Nutrition is for educational purposes only and is not intended to diagnose, prescribe, or cure.